You're listening to Classic Business with Michael Avery, brought to you by Altron, there when it matters.
The Classic Business Show is brought to you by Altron, technology partners in your digital transformation journey. For more information, visit them at altron.com. Altron, there when it matters. Now, it's time to talk regulatory matters, and specifically the Competition Commission's important interim report on the dominance of national chain stores as a threat to small businesses. And it raises some very important policy issues, which should make for a robust debate here in South Africa. And as I mentioned earlier on in the show, I have just returned from an eye-opening trip to Poland, where I was a guest along with several property analysts and investors and shareholders of a retail-focused REIT by the name of EPP. There's several who are South African or South African-linked that have gone into Central and Eastern European markets, and particularly lured by the growth of the retail sectors in those countries. And we didn't get into the details of competition law, but it was clear that the model is very similar to what we find here in South Africa. Large retail precincts and malls funded on the back of large anchor tenants, which give them their GLA thresholds, which make these projects financially viable. And it's a concept that the Competition Commission seems to acknowledge as important. However, where the competition authorities appear to diverge and be concerned is with some of the so-called exclusivity leases or clauses implemented or imposed in these leases, and whether or not these are anti-competitive, if they're keeping smaller players out of the market, if it's fair or necessary. Well, to talk about the implications and the interim report, it's a great pleasure to welcome James Hodge, Chief Economist at the Competition Commission. James, thanks for joining us.
Thanks, Michael.
Also on the line, we've got Heather Irvine, Director of Falcon & Hume Inc. Attorneys. Heather, always a pleasure.
Good evening, Michael.
And Tony DeFonseca, the MD of specialist retailer OBC Chicken and Meat, and I think former head of FASA, the Franchising Association of South Africa. So speaking for the little guy in a big way, I guess. Tony, how are you doing?
Good evening, Michael. Very well as yourself. Thank you very much.
Very, very well. Thanks. James, kick us off here. What's the background to this particular market inquiry?
So I suppose the market inquiry originally tried to focus on spaza shops and small township retailers and their response to the encroachment of large supermarket chains into those areas, as well as, in fact, foreign spaza shop owners. But as the inquiry dug deeper, it did develop into to look at the plight of small retailers more generally and some of the practices of large supermarket chains, which were being practiced in these new township developments, but also had broader implication.
James, when we look at the findings, and this is an interim report, the commission suggests that the retailers, the national retailers, all sign up to an agreed industry code of conduct, in terms of which all of the retailers won't allow any of these clauses, these exclusivity clauses, in new leases, and then phase them out in existing leases over 3 years. Firstly, what exactly are these exclusivity clauses all about?
So, Michael, the exclusivity clauses that we've identified as problematic generally seek to leverage exactly that bargaining at the front end of a property development where the property developer is looking for an anchor tenant, and using that position of power to set about exclusivity, which will prevent another national retailer, so preventing another Pick and Pay or ShopRite entering that shopping mall. But I think more worrying for us is also excluding every other potential competitor, even small specialist stores. This may be your OBC is on the line, but it can just be your delicatessen bakery or butchery that might otherwise have appeared in that shopping mall. Now, given shopping malls are so pervasive in South Africa and where the majority of consumers shop, being cut off from that source of demand for your product really makes being a small retailer quite challenging. And I think our concern is it eliminates a lot of dynamism in the market. And in a context where we're looking for growth and employment opportunities, cutting off that source of entrepreneurship is concerning.
Heather, to bring you in here, and Tony, before you respond, is more regulation of the whole retail industry really the answer? Wouldn't it be better for government just to stay out of commercial negotiations between landlords and retailers?
Michael, I think in general the competition authorities have shied away from price regulation, but the suggestion seems here to be to set up a framework which will create more regulation that is the way in which this kind of bargaining can happen. That, of course, would be subject to much more public comment, and that law would have to go through Parliament, or if it's done through some sort of other municipal bylaws, those would have to wind their way through the municipal lawmaking process. So it's likely to be a fairly extended process, and there's likely to be considerable debate about what the rules should be and who should...
Oh, I think we just lost the line there. Tony, to bounce the question over to you, it was very interesting, and this is just an observation from my trip to Poland, to see how much space was given to Polish brands and smaller businesses inside many of the larger mall precincts. They had French national chains like Auchan and a few others anchoring these developments. But then there was a very clear and conscious effort to ensure that the retail offering was as diverse as possible. Does this require regulatory intervention? Or is this something perhaps that landlords and retailers just need to be a whole lot more mindful of?
Michael, I think in instances where, you know, I've always been for self-regulation, certainly with my experience at the Franchise Association, the industry has been fighting for self-regulation. But when it comes to scenarios like this where there's, I wouldn't even say attempts, but, you know, when there's blatant situations where retailers like ourselves get excluded from the center or get told how much floor space we can have, or get told, you know, only last week we experienced that with a major retailer where, if I can quote, we'll allow you into the center, but you can't sell this and you can't sell that, and you can't list groceries, et cetera, which for a butchery-type store, not to sell complementary groceries and products to a butchery-type environment just makes it non-viable. So this is a situation we're not going to go in, and, you know, our average store can employ anything between 50 and 70 people, and there's some lost opportunities, and situations like this, I can think at the back of my mind at least 10 of these have arisen over the last 12 months. There's a lot of jobs that didn't happen. So I'm all for self-regulation, but when there's this blatant instructions almost of, you know, you can't come in at all or you can come in under certain conditions, then I suppose some kind of regulation is going to be essential.
James, just to bring you back in on that point around allowing these clauses to be phased out in existing leases over 3 years, you did say that failing this, the Competition Commission will initiate a complaint and investigate whether these clauses are having an exclusionary effect. Now, that threat to investigate a complaint does seem to be empty, and I say that because the competition authorities did in fact investigate these leases some time ago and didn't refer a complaint to the tribunal then. So what has changed in the intervening period?
Thanks, Michael. If I could quickly just also chip in on the self-regulation, I think just an observation from our side is any single industry player has less incentive to, for instance, not insist on exclusivity if they know that their competitors are going to insist. It puts them at a disadvantage, and that's where a code of conduct or an industry code of conduct is preferable. At least then everyone's in the same boat and it's a level playing field. So the first call is for an industry code of conduct, and that's a preferred approach. And as pointed out by Tony, you know, the recommendation does make clear that we'd prefer an immediate cessation to any sort of clauses that push out small businesses, because they're largely unjustified. To get back to your question on what has changed, I think the investigation many years ago, first of all, didn't have quite the same context as a market inquiry, but also was more focused probably on between large retailers. So would Pick and Pay keeping ShopRite out be a competitive problem or not? I think what's come through the market inquiry process is that the problem is much deeper than that. That, in fact, exactly emerging chains like OBCs on the line or Food Lovers Market that could bring real competition to the big four are being excluded. And then the effect on smaller businesses. Now smaller businesses may not compete directly, but they offer more choice, diversity, which is a benefit to consumers. And certainly I'm confident that taking a complaint of this nature has merit. I think why we prefer an industry code of conduct at this stage is, in fact, engaging with some of the large retailers in the course of the inquiry shows that a number of them are willing to move, but it is willingness to move if the whole industry moves. They don't want to be disadvantaged. So if there is scope for that, that would be great. Litigation does also take time.
It's time consuming, it's expensive, and ultimately one as... one wants to see an environment where regulators and business work together for the better of industries, and the relationships are not as adversarial, perhaps as they have been in the past. Heather, we've got this suggestion of voluntary commitments by retailers in the form of a code of conduct, but at the same time, there does seem to be the proposal for regulation of both rental pricing and the lease terms by an ombudsman. So for me, it's unclear why the retailers would agree to anything voluntarily if they're going to face regulation down the line anyway.
Now, I think that is a major concern, Michael. It's very difficult to convince companies that they should voluntarily give any sort of commitments if they are going to face exactly the same risk of a regulatory process down the line. And there's, of course, a limit to what competing companies can agree to in terms of the Competition Act. And there may need to be some discussion about appropriate exemption for some of these things to be able to happen, because, of course, in the ordinary course, competing companies can't sit down and agree on pricing or trading terms.
That's an important point, James. Have you given thought to how that might work in the broader framework and context that Heather has just articulated?
So currently the engagement is with the inquiry team, and so there can be bilateral engagements that edge us towards some sort of industry code. So those can be managed. I think if the question on why should retailers participate and voluntary, I think, Michael, you raised an important point that very often these relationships are adversarial, and they need not be, certainly not from the Commission's perspective. We understand why that happens. But in fact, often for businesses, it's better to engage because you're able to shape the outcome. And constructive engagement is, I think, going to serve both parties very well.
Tony, to bring you in here and to look at it from the other side of the equation, would it be naive to consider that government should really be focused on creating the conditions which are conducive to growing smaller retailers, and by so doing, you would expect those smaller retailers to grow naturally and have less trouble bargaining with shopping centres? Or are these exclusivity clauses inhibiting that one cannot even hope to see smaller retailers grow in this environment?
Well, I wouldn't say it's absolutely impossible. You know, certainly from our side, you know, despite the challenges that we have faced, we've seen some very good growth in a very difficult economy. We could have certainly been opening more stores, but we're anticipating opening another 10 stores this year. So we just found we have to work that much harder to find the right sites where there isn't exclusivities or where there isn't any kind of pressure from anchor tenants. But it does make it a lot more difficult. And, you know, certainly we're a 30-year-old business, so we've 33-year-old business to be precise, and we've cut our teeth. So we've learned, you know, how to get things done. But I think for anybody emerging now, it's tough out there. And certainly if you look at anchors, literally anything you can buy, that you need, you could probably buy in one of the major chains in your supermarkets. So for anybody of a smaller size, or a smaller, be it food business or be it any other retailer, to come in and compete at higher rentals and obviously not have the buying power, it's extremely difficult. You know, certainly from our side, given the size that we've managed to grow to and have centralized distribution and to a certain extent build up our ability to buy eventually, it's been tough for us. So, you know, but it's taught us some great lessons, and it's, you know, we've been we've managed to grow in this tough environment. But I guess for smaller retailers to come into the market right now, I think it'd be quite a challenge. It would certainly be a challenge at the moment.
Now, there's so much still to discuss, but unfortunately we are running out of time, James. So I'd just like you to wrap it up for us. What happens now? It's an interim report. You're obviously expecting some commentary, and then you could come back to market with the final report. What are the next steps?
That's correct. We're expecting commentary by the end of this month, and then we'll look to release a final report by the end of September at the latest. There will be some engagements around those submissions in the course of July, and also with government, because a lot of the recommendations also look at a conducive government environment as well. And maybe just a last comment on your previous question, Michael, is, you know, I think having a conducive environment for small business is important, but to throw money at that or effort at that when it's just simply undermined by exclusivity means that you're not pulling in the same direction. You need to also unblock parts of the market. And so, as Tony rightly pointed out, you know, some people may fight their way through, but a lot of having the door shut on them right at the start.
And it was interesting to note in the footnotes of submissions by Redefine saying that many of those agreements were legacy agreements and they were frankly tired of them. Well, you be the judge. Does retail need more regulatory therapy? Go and download the report, make your comments and make your voice heard. James Hodge, Chief Economist at the Competition Commission, thank you very much for joining us, as well as Heather Irvine, Director of Falcon & Hume Inc. Attorneys, and Tony De Fonseca, MD of Specialist Retailer OBC Chicken & Meat.